The road had not been walked in 7 years. That was what the villagers at Merrow's Ford said anyway. They said it with the casual certainty of people who measure time by seasons and harvests, not by the hum of stones. They said it over ale at the tavern, over mended nets at the quay, over the collapsed roof of the church that no one bothered to repair. The pilgrim's road was dead. The stones were broken. The darkness had taken what it wanted, or moved on, or simply faded like mist at noon. Nobody knew. Nobody cared enough to find out. So when the traveler arrived, the villagers barely noticed. He came at dusk, riding a lean bay horse that moved with the careful economy of an animal that knows its rider cannot afford to waste its strength. He wore a travel cloak the color of wet earth, patched at the elbows and hem, the fabric stiff with dust and dried rain. His face was not bruised; the bruises had healed weeks ago, leaving only faint scars along his jawline, but his eyes carried the same hollow exhaustion, the same look of a man who had walked through something he could not name and emerged on the other side changed. He asked for lodging at the tavern. The innkeeper gave him a room above the common hall and a bowl of thin stew. The traveler ate in silence, his hands steady, his appetite measured. He did not speak to the other patrons. He did not listen to their stories. He listened to the wind outside, to the way it moved through the valley, to the absence of something underneath the sound. Something that had once hummed. After supper, he climbed the narrow stairs to his room and unlaced his boots. He sat on the edge of the bed and removed his gloves. His hands were rough, the knuckles scarred, the fingernails split and dirty. He flexed them slowly, feeling the stiffness in the joints, the ache that lived deep in the bones and never fully left. Then he reached into his satchel and pulled out a folded piece of parchment, creased and yellowed, the edges frayed from being handled too many times. It was a deed. The traveler had found it tucked inside a leather-bound book in the ruins of a cottage on the edge of Harrow's End ruins that no longer existed, having been torn down by Torvin's men, and the stone carted away for some new hall that nobody from Merrow's Ford had ever visited. The deed was written in a hand that was precise and angular, the ink faded to brown, the seals cracked and flaking. It transferred ownership of a parcel of land formerly Harrow's End farm to one Torvin, foreman to the baron, in settlement of a debt of 50 crowns. But the land described in the deed was not a farm, it was a road. The traveler had read it 3 times. Each time the words meant the same thing. Ilse Vane, keeper of the Pilgrim's Road, had signed away the road itself. She had believed, or pretended to believe, that the land attached to the deed was worthless, rocky, windblown, incapable of sustaining wheat or goats or anything else worth growing. She had signed without reading closely, or perhaps she had read it and not understood what she was signing, or perhaps she had understood perfectly and signed anyway, because some debts cannot be paid with ink and seal. The traveler folded the parchment and returned it to his satchel. He blew out the candle. He lay on the bed and stared at the ceiling until sleep took him. In the morning, he woke before dawn and dressed in the dark. He left a coin on the table for the stew in the room and walked out into the street. The village was quiet. Chimneys smoked. Dogs slept in doorways. A woman drew water from the well, her bucket clinking against the rope, her breath visible in the cold air. The traveler nodded to her. She did not nod back. He walked past the church with its collapsed roof, past the tavern, past the well, until the village ended and the land opened up. The ground rose gradually, rising from the flat valley floor into the first slope of the hills, and here, embedded in the frost-hardened earth, he saw it. A waystone. It was not the waystone from the stories. The stories spoke of tall, dark stones that hummed with a sound you felt in your chest, stones that marked the pilgrim's road and kept the darkness at bay. This stone was smaller, shorter, its top worn smooth by centuries of wind and rain and hands. It stood alone in a field of frost-glittered grass, unmarked by any road, unconnected to anything anyone could see. But the traveler knew what it was. He knew because he had been told, and because the deed in his satchel proved it, and because the hum faint, almost imperceptible, vibrated through the soles of his boots. He approached it slowly. The stone was solid, unbroken. It rose from the earth like a finger pointing at the sky, its surface rough and pitted, its base embedded in soil that had been undisturbed for decades. The traveler reached out and placed his palm against it. Cold, that was the first thing, cold and hard and real. Stone was always cold, even in summer, even in sunlight, but beneath the cold, something else. Something that was not temperature. Something that pressed against his palm like a hand pressing back, faint and distant, the ghost of warmth that had been absorbed into the rock and never fully released. Ilse's hand. He did not know her name when he first touched the stone. He could not imagine what a woman had endured here, years ago, her arms trembling, her throat bleeding, her will locked against fracture, holding back something that hunted memory and connection rather than flesh. He could not guess that she had sung not a song with melody or words, but a song made of intent and will, the kind of song that required no musical training, only the courage to refuse letting go. He could not fathom what she had lost, or where she had walked afterward, toward a daughter who might not remember her, toward a village that had abandoned the road, toward a future she could not picture. He knew none of this, but the stone remembered. The traveler kept his hand on the stone for a long time. He closed his eyes. He let the cold seep into his palm, let the faint warmth underneath it rise to meet him, let the hum fill his chest like a second heartbeat. When he opened his eyes, the sun had crested the ridge, painting the sky in shades of gray and gold, and the field was no longer empty. He could see the others now. Not stones, not exactly, but traces. Where a waystone had once stood, the earth was scarred and disturbed, the soil darker and looser than the surrounding ground. Three such scars stretched northward along the route of the old road, each one marking the absence of a stone that had been torn from the earth by force. Iron wedges had been driven into the rock. Hammers had shattered what wedges could not pry loose. The second waystone had been reduced to a jagged stump, its splintered top catching the light like broken teeth. The third had been erased entirely, leaving only a depression in the soil where the roots of the stone had once gripped the earth. The fourth, the traveler had seen the day before, standing at the edge of the northern hollow, its hairline crack visible as a thin white line across the dark face, gleaming like ice in the moonlight. It had held. It had held while the darkness pressed against it, while the hum dropped from a low thrum to a jagged whine, and then smoothed to something lower, steadier, more desperate. It had held while a woman stood before it with her hands pressed against cold stone, her will locked against fracture, her heart a closed fist. The traveler turned south and began to walk. He walked the old route of the pilgrim's road, following the line of scars and stumps, counting the gaps in the binding the way a doctor counts pulses. Seven breaks. He had been told there were seven. He counted them now and found six. The seventh was where he stood, at the first intact waystone, the only one that had not been touched by iron or hammer or the hands of men who saw only timber and stone and nothing more. Torvin, the name came to the traveler unbidden, the way names surface from dreams. Torvin, foreman to Baron Kalin, a man of facts and figures, of ledgers and contracts and property deeds. Torvin, who had arrived with red cloaks bright as blood against a gray landscape, who had smiled when he told Ilse Vane that her debt was paid, who had turned his horse and ridden away without looking back. Torvin, who had taken the stones to his lord's new hall, who had never known what they had held back, who had stood in a magnificent, meaningless room and marveled at cold rock. The traveler did not hate him. Hate required investment. Torvin was simply a man who had done what men like him always did. He had measured the world in crowns and acreage and had found the pilgrim's road wanting. He had seen a road that did not produce grain, that did not carry trade, that did not bring profit. He had seen standing stones that served no purpose a ledger could quantify, and he had removed them. That was all. The traveler continued walking. The road was cracked and overgrown, disappearing into the hollow ahead, its surface broken by frost heave and the roots of weeds that had grown unchecked for 7 years. But the earth remembered the road. The grass grew straighter along its line. The wind moved differently over it, and the stones what remained of them still hummed. He reached the hollow. He stood at the edge and looked down. The fourth waystone stood in the center of the hollow, dark against the gray sky, its crack still visible, still unbroken. The darkness had not come here, not in 7 years, not since the woman had stood before it and refused to let go. The grass around it was green, not gray and brittle. The air was still. The hum was louder here, a jagged, strained whine that vibrated through the traveler's ribs, that made his teeth ache, that sounded like something holding on by a thread. He approached the stone. He placed both hands against it. The warmth was stronger here, closer. As if Ilse had been standing at this exact spot, pressing her palms against the stone, pouring everything she had into the refusal, and the stone had absorbed it, held it, kept it, waiting for someone to come back and feel it. The traveler closed his eyes. He thought about the ledger he had found in the cottage, Uncle Eamon's ledger. The pages were brittle, the ink faded, the handwriting precise and angular, the entries sparse. Dates, names, notes. The traveler had read them by candlelight, his fingers careful not to tear the paper, his breath shallow. The road is long, but the stone remembers. That was the first entry. Not a date, not a name, a statement, a directive, a prayer. Below it a list, dates stretching back decades, perhaps centuries, travelers who had passed this way, some with names, some with descriptions, a man with a limp, a woman with a red shawl, three boys riding one horse. Next to each name, a notation, passed north, well, or passed south, well, or occasionally a single word, lost. The traveler had counted the lost ones. 47 names. 47 travelers who had asked the way and never returned. 47 dates recorded in a ledger kept by a dead man who had not just maintained the road, but actively turned away those who sought to stop the traveler's progress, who had fed them, who had sent them north with warnings and blessings, and the knowledge that the stones would protect them as long as the stones stood, as long as the road was kept, as long as someone remembered. 47 names. 47 ghosts walking the road still, the traveler thought. 47 memories the darkness had hunted and consumed. He opened his eyes, the hollow was empty, the stone was cold beneath his hands, the hum was steady. He thought about Jaren. He had met Jaren once in a tavern three towns south, 6 months after the road had gone silent. Jaren had been older then, older than the stories made him, his face lined and his hair gray at the temples, his hands scarred from years of walking and fighting and holding. He had sat across from the traveler at a wooden table, his cup of ale untouched, his eyes fixed on something the traveler could not see. "The road is not a road," Jaren had said. "It is a binding. It holds the dark back and keeps the rot contained. When the stones fall, the binding breaks. When the binding breaks." He had not finished the sentence. He had not needed to. The traveler understood. "What happens?" he had asked. Jaren had looked at him for a long time. Then he had said, "The dark comes. It hunts memory and connection rather than flesh. It eats what people love and forgets what they were. And when it is done, there is nothing left but silence." The traveler had asked him why nobody had tried to fix it. Why nobody had reinforced the stones, replaced the ones that fell, sung the songs that held the binding together. Jaren had laughed. It was a dry, hollow sound. Because nobody knew, because the keepers died, because the road was forgotten, because the Baron's men removed the stones and told everyone it was just rock and superstition and waste. He had paused. "Because one woman stood at the last stone and held it for 3 days and bled from her throat and saved us all, and then she had to walk away because the Baron took her farm and her horse and everything else she owned, and she chose her daughter over the stone." The traveler had not known what to say. Jaren had finished his ale. He had stood. He had said, "The road continues. Empty but intact, carrying the memory of those who walked it. That is all it ever does. That is all it ever will." And then he had left. The traveler had never seen him again. Now, standing at the fourth waystone with both hands pressed against cold stone, the traveler understood what Jaren had meant. The road was empty. No footprints marred the dust. No horse tracks broke the crust of frost. No villagers walked its cracked surface. No merchants carried goods along its line. No pilgrims sought passage north or south. It was empty. But it was intact. The first waystone stood solid. The second was a stump. The third was a scar. The fourth gleamed like ice, its crack visible but unbroken. The binding held. The darkness had not come. The hum was strained but unbroken, a ragged song that had been singing for 7 years without rest, without pause, without the help of a keeper. The traveler removed his hands from the stone. He stepped back. He looked at it one last time. He did not know Ilsvein's name. He could not guess the weight of her years 26, 17. The memory of a daughter named Alara who wanted to see the sea, nor could he see the violence she had absorbed. Arms trembling violently, muscles burning, throat bleeding, knees buckled, yet she had not moved. He did not know these things. But the stone knew, the road knew, the earth knew. The traveler turned and walked away. He walked south, back toward Merrow's Ford, back toward the village with its 12 houses and its collapsed church and its people who measured time by seasons and harvests and had no idea that the road behind them was still humming, still holding, still carrying the memory of a woman who had walked away and a daughter who had survived, and a traveler who had bled from his throat, and a dead man who had kept a ledger, and a foreman who had taken stones for a hall, and a darkness that had come and gone, and 47 names that the stones still remembered. He walked until the hollow was behind him and the first waystone was in sight. He stopped. He turned back. He looked at the line of stones receding into the distance, the solid one, the stump, the scar, the cracked stone at the edge of the hollow end. He felt the hum in his chest, low and steady and fraying at the edges, a song that had been singing for centuries and would continue to sing after he was gone, after the village forgot, after the road was overgrown and the stones fell and the earth swallowed them whole. The road continues, empty but intact, carrying the memory of those who walked it. That was all it ever did. That was all it ever would. The traveler walked away. The wind moved through the field. The stones hummed. And far to the north, beyond the hollow and the scar and the stump, the pilgrim's road vanished into the gray, its cracked surface swallowed by weeds, unwalked and unmourned, holding the dark at bay with nothing but stone and memory and the faint, stubborn warmth of a hand that had refused to let go. The road did not judge her. The road did not forgive her. The road simply remembered. And that was all it ever did.